Hey everybody, welcome to Blat Chat. Guess who's hosted this week? It's me. It's because Josh can't host because he's visiting Bryn's Nan. Yes. So he can't host. So his internet might be a little bit dodgy, right, Josh?
Yeah, Bryn's grandma hasn't got the newest fiber internet connection in the UK. And don't worry, this isn't a hotel room, even though there's a key card right there. That's
they just like security at Bryn's Nan's house. they really like to be secure over there.
Yeah, they do. They do. They've locked her in a room for a while, actually. We're not sure whether she's around, but we keep getting given meals and we're assuming that she's the one cooking. So I don't know. We'll see what happens. You know, sometimes people forget about old people in the UK and they just turn up.
Well, that's why they have the key cards, because they have digital records now of who visits. So, like, they're going to have logs of it and everything. Well, we also are joined, of course, by the standards here. We have
introductions?
I'm going to introduce here. Don't worry. Yeah. Listen, these British men, they've kind of thrown in the towel. They're done caring about, like, me, I'm ready to pop off, okay? Like, so let's, so we got the Green Giant reinforced, of course, and then also we got Custa. He's been showing up a lot. He's got good hair today, honestly. He got good hair.
Thank you.
What are you using it? You use a pomade or a mousse?
No, I woke up, had a shower, blow dried it, and then here we are. I never use product. No, I don't like doing it in the hair.
He's also got a bit of a tan, you know, from being in Europe.
This
you know,
is nice.
Like, look at that. Oh, look at that red light, you know, tanning.
I went outside for the first time in like 2.5 years when I went to Europe, and it was awful. So I came back and now I'm back in my room. And
yeah, that's fair. That's fair. What parts of Europe did you see? What was it? Paris?
I went to Barcelona and I did a week in Barcelona and a week in Paris, which was pretty awesome.
Did you see anything nice? What was your favorite thing that you saw in Barcelona or Paris?
The Sagrada Familia in Barcelona focus is actually got a mug from there, but it's an incredible, like, I don't know exactly what it's called, but like kind of like an enormous chapel in the
middle of
Barcelona.
It's an outrageous cathedral that has phenomenal architecture, and you've got a mug. That's what you showed everybody. You pulled up a mug.
What do you want him to get? You want to go to a piece of the masonry?
You guys don't need to go anymore. Okay, you've seen it. Okay, problems solved. There you go. Welcome to the Sagrada Familia. But it's actually incredible. But yeah, there was honestly a ton of cool architecture and just like the streets. Because like I've been in Australia and America where everything's pretty just like concrete jungle, baby. But, you know, there's so much history in all those places, so it's cool.
Okay. Now, Johnny, do you have anything for show and tell?
No.
Okay. Well, in that case, that's cool. I mean, not really as cool as the mug, but fine. Let's go into the first topic then, huh? Now that we're done with show and tell, everyone, you know, we'll do career week next. We're going to bring our parents. So let's go with the first topic here. First topic, Super. Everyone remember that guy? Remember him? Yeah, he retired. He has left Overwatch League, left the Shock a month before the season has started. Some would say that is news. Some would say that's quite news for Super to retire. I mean, what's the panel? What are the panel's thoughts on that? Is that news?
Yeah, I would vote that to be news. That was pretty newsworthy.
Okay. Is that where you consensus then? That's pretty big.
Yeah.
Yeah, we can move on.
Okay.
There were reports about Super potentially looking to retire. What was that? The beginning of this offseason, I think.
Yeah.
And he had decided not to after committing to it. And then he put out a tweet longer and he was talking on stream about it too. And it seems like he thought he had that passion still. And the closer it got to the season beginning, he realized, oh shit, here we go again. And it just kind of realized that he didn't have it in him to like give 120% like he usually would and try and go out there and win the championship for the third time, by the way, that would be.
I mean, you get why, right? Because Overwatch 2 is coming out. So you're like, oh, I really want to be part of the first season of First season of Overwatch 2 League. And, so I think naturally you want to be part of that. And also, you just get to retire once. Oh, well, not really. But
not an Overwatch. You only retire once. Definitely not an Overwatch.
And so I think it's probably a super difficult decision. And I think most people would have been very optimistic about, you know, I want to at least try Overwatch 2 once and then I can move on. And, you know, if I want to continue streaming like Super, then, you know, I can do that. But I think when you've gotten a taste, just like a sniff of real life without video games 12 hours a day, it's hard to go back. Yeah. It's hard to go back to being a video game nerd.
Sorry, are you saying that Super's streaming career is a sniff of real life? That's even less real life than being a video game pro.
Look, the structure is very different, though, between the stream.
Yeah, the structure is very different, okay? Yeah. You don't have a crusty just like, yo, I need you to turn up and play the best Reinhardt you've ever played for the next 2 hours because we're going to scrim the little Spitfire. Like, there's none of that. You can just like, I'm going to turn my stream on. Can I hang out in my Discord? You know, can I have a good time? You know, we're going to play some Elden Ring. We're going to watch some anime together. Like, I don't know. Like, it's probably way easier.
By the way, he's instantly gone into retirement and started commanding a horde of minions to create artwork for him on Reddit. I mean, that's what he's done. He's gone and just started pulling strings, making people create Giga Chad stuff all over the place. Are you getting any commission for that, by the way? Connor, are you getting any of the sweet goody from some royalties perhaps for the artwork?
Not quite. No, I'm not getting any royalties. You know, on the super topic, I do think the big thing is like, so I've, you know, we're close friends. We used to be on Bird Noises together. Okay. Everyone remembers that team, of course, Bird Noises.
Oh, it's like me and Twick.
Yeah, exactly. but we've been talking a while throughout the offseason about his talks about retirement. Obviously, I'm not going to trot out the specifics, but it's definitely something he's been weighing pretty significantly. And it's like,
he was manager?
No, I'm not his manager. I consider myself more of a mentee, a mentor, you know, more of a mentor in that respect. I'm mentoring Super. And, you know, he talked a lot about it. He wavered a lot. Like, it's realistically, you know, a lot of people were bringing out takes that it was like, oh, Overwatch 2 just sucks. Yeah. That's what it, and he's retiring. It's like, no, it's not really that. It's like, he's definitely somebody that's been on the fence for a while. And it was a struggle for him, obviously, to be like, oh, man, am I going to leave my team when, like, we need a tank player? And also, like, you know, do I really want to go into a new game and have to, like, learn all this new stuff when I've, like, won twice and, like, I have a lot of other things going on with me? Where, like, yes, the streamer schedule is very different than the pro schedule. There's no – you don't have a scrim blocks you have to show up to anymore. You can wake up whenever you want, turn on the stream. You don't have to shower. I mean, as a pro player, you don't have to shower really either, but it's recommended. But either way, it's like, it's still, there's just a very different schedule. And I think, and that drive to compete at the top level is, it's hard to maintain for, I mean, he's been doing that. He's been going all gas, no breaks for like 5 years, you know? Yeah.
Especially streaming on the side too. Yeah, playing hard. Professionally, scrimming, then streaming? No.
That's crazy. My mind would have collapsed into a singularity after like, and after I did my 1 year of 2019, where I did like, 3 days of casting, 1 day in Korea time, and then 4 days of co-stream, like every week for like 5 months, my mind wanted to explode. So like, I can't even imagine like his size schedule for like, he's done it for essentially really with Overwatch League. So about like 3 years now, you know, like that's crazy. Like that's a ridiculous workload, especially when you want to name at the top level.
But he's done such a good job of maintaining that level of like brand and community connection the entire time that he was a player. Cause there are players that are funny, like well, maybe not everyone's funny, like Super's funny, but there are players who are funny and personable and stuff like that, but they just don't have the desire or the time or whatever to put that into streaming and build that brand and kind of create that thing that's going to be there outside of the game for when they leave. And even the people that do stream, a lot of them don't have that the ability to transfer that into variety stuff like he's been able to do. So he's just a natural entertainer, and he's been able to just rock whatever he's done so far. So I'm sure he's going to crush it in streaming. If he actually just put 100% of his effort into that, his numbers is going to skyrocket. He's going to be like huge. And also, I'm sure he'll be streaming Overwatch 2 with all the other people who are going to be streaming Overwatch 2 as well, because it's just going to be a good business idea, if nothing else. And if it does blow up, who are you going to be watching? Who are you going to be watching in Overwatch 2?
XQC.
Who's a streamer? Okay, but... Okay, but apart from that, who are you going to be watching?
Team like, the Batman.
No, you're not. No, sorry. You're watching
the
Batman instead of Super playing Overwatch 2. Not a shot you are.
No, definitely not. I mean, and so we've hit, and also, you know, because of Overwatch, we touched on earlier, because Overwatch works, could always unretire, because there's no actual, retirement doesn't really mean shit in this game, honestly, if you really care.
What are the Shock going to do to his jersey?
Are they going to retire his jersey?
I mean,
I'm sure Andy Miller is looking to, like, essentially build it into, like, the pillars of his new mansion, of the NRG mansion or something. Like, they're going to... I don't know what they're going to do.
It's a little Reinhardt hammer underneath, though, that says smash in case of emergency, so that he can always return back whenever required. That's what he needs.
Well, let's talk legacy here, then. Custom, I got to ask you. So let's talk legacy here for Super. Like, Super retiring, leaving, like, the face... Honestly, been the face of the league, I'd say, for, like, 2 years now, just about. Yeah. And, like, his impact as a player. Like, what does Super's... presence leaving on the competitive side? Like, what sort of gap in like history does that leave, you know, for us?
Like, I think the biggest testament that you can ever have as a player is when you listen to the coaches and the players around him when he was retiring, when, you know, they've had success. They always pointed towards Super and been like, this is what he provided to the team. Obviously, you know, there's Reinhardt one tricks, you know, he comes in to play the Roadhog every now and then, but people say that his impact is felt on the team whenever he's, you know, on the stage, all that kind of stuff, just his leadership, his moral support. You've just heard the comms of him just like talking trash to the opposition team and just like hyping people up. That's invaluable. And I think that's such an important part of the legacy that he's left behind, of that, like the leadership aspect and the fact that he has sort of led these people to the two championships. Everyone says that he was an integral member. You know, he wasn't just someone who was in the background, who's incredibly talented and mechanical. He actually sort of elevated them to that next step. And he has been the face of the Shock for, I guess, what, you know, 3 years now. So I think he's going to be sorely missed, not just in the game, but also from like a marketing and like, I guess, team building perspective.
Yeah, I don't know what Shock are going to do from a brand perspective, because like I feel like 2/3 of their content is like just putting Super on their YouTube channel and shit. So like, I don't know what they're going to do. I'm not going to get, I don't want to throw too much of my thoughts, because like I'm very, because then we're going to start to get cringe with emotions, you know, we're going to start getting, and emotions, like, obviously, we don't want to
emotions
talk about
not cringe of us.
Well, I know, obviously, it's out. Not. It's just, the point being is that, you know, Super
repressed American man.
I think I've already talked it out with him and everything, but like, you know, he has been for me like a little brother of sorts. I honestly is like, we competed on our first like big team together. We, you know, ascended through the ranks and everything. And then obviously his career since we've descended into Overwatch League, has gone a lot better as a player than mine. but it's undeniable that he's like incredibly talented. I'm super proud of him. And I'm excited to see what he's going to do as a streamer. And I think it's fine for me. I think this is a good time if you wanted to retire, You ended up, like, you won the Overwatch League twice. You've built an incredible community. Like, everyone is like, you're the undisputed, like, best, I would say, like, pretty fairly best Western main tank, you know, like, and on and towards the top of just overall tank list for a lot of Western tank players, you know, like, your career has been amazing. It's been fucking incredible. Yeah. Like, so
I think
time to call it if you want to.
I think if you continue even that thought process of like, he's very easily the best Western main tank, but also when we did our greatest of all time tank rankings, he ended up at number one. Yeah. And then we were also, we never did a greatest of all time just literal list. But he's one of those players with that double championship win from the Shock, and who was up at the top of the main tank list as well, that would have to be in the conversation at least for literal GOAT player, like across roles kind of thing. So he really has just been the heart and soul of the Overwatch League for the last 2 years, and also been putting in insane performances for the last at least four, right? If you're considering like what he was doing right before the league was kicking off and how well he was playing as like a player coming up, and then towards the end of season one when he was able to play, and then the championships in seasons two and three. So
I think people,
been pretty fantastic.
I think people forget how, like, you know, we like to meme that he's like the Roadhog Reinhardt two trick, but like, I think people forget, just because he was playing behind Smurf, how like talented he was at everything. Like, people are like, oh, you know, like, how can you consider him one of the best main tanks? He didn't even play Winston. But it's like, even like before the Shock and like before, you know, Smurf joined the team, he was a great Winston player. And like on his up and coming, he had that flexibility. It's not that he never had it. It's just he never played it at that level because of, you know, how stacked the Shock is. So I think he is definitely like one of the best main tanks. He'll go down as probably one of the best main tanks of all time in Overwatch 1. So I'm excited to see what he does moving onwards though as like a streamer, because it kind of feels like the XQC effect. Like, wasn't XQC almost at like an identical level when he like went out in a ball of flames, like 5,000 stream, and then like he retires slash gets kicked out? Yeah, he was only
his
about
stream was
5,
pretty, I mean, at the end of his tenure on Fuel, yeah, I mean, he was definitely at least like 2 to 3K, like, pretty consistently. He was definitely at least in the 2 to 3K range. What's Super, like, you know, like, he's always sitting around 2 to 3,000, if not more, depending on what he's doing. So like, I mean, I would definitely say their exits from the Overwatch League are different. They're different circumstances. So yeah, probably pretty close. He's got good escape velocity to be like whatever he wants to be. And I think overall, like, it left a huge legacy on the league. Hopefully he sticks around with the community, like heading to Overwatch 2 and everything. So it's going to be a sorely missed piece. And I hope to see him pop up from time to time. I got some interest.
We have a lot of people that have retired this season too. Yeah. And there's always a lot of player turnover in Overwatch League, but there's been a lot of like legendary players that have put it down this year. I mean, Super, you've got Jonak as well that's taking a step back, who was intending to play the season out. Birdring took a step back as well after playing arguably his best season most recently, and like a super legendary player too. There's got to be others, right, that I'm forgetting off the top of my head. Who are just sure. I mean, that's, yeah.
What a
crazy player.
Yeah, I mean, there's like so many
fully retire.
Yeah, I didn't hear
fully. Not fully, but like, you know, he's not in the league this year.
Right. I mean, with Moth at the moment, right? He's not in the league at the moment.
Yeah. I mean, there's just, I think it feels like it's a natural inflection point, right? For a lot of players' careers. It's like, it's the end of Overwatch 1. We're in Overwatch 2. We don't know exactly what's happening. Also, I've been playing the game for 5+ years, you know, depending on if you were in the beta or not, or, you know, stuff like that. Like, so it's just, it's a long time. And like, after nearly half a decade committed to a game, it's the issue of like, you know, what are you going to start doing? Like, do you still want to keep playing? Like, some people, they have that grind to keep going. But realistically, like, the reason I feel like a lot of pro players retire anyways as they get older, it's not because of lack of skill. It's just because you start realizing like, damn, like, I can't cook for myself and live a healthy lifestyle and do other things if I'm playing video games 12 hours a day. You know, it's just like tough. It's really tough to hold that balance as you get older.
Yeah, I think it's a testament to how difficult it is to be an Overwatch pro. Like, even in some other games, you can keep going into your like early 30s. Like, you can just look at Counter-Strike, for example. Like, they're not going to change the way smokes works. Like, usually you can practice those lineups and you know how the game functions, and then you can just practice your mechanical skill, you know, get a new team together, work with the teamwork, etc. But like, Overwatch, it's so in flux. So many things change all the time. Such a dynamic game that you have to put in these extreme hours to just compete with the very best, especially during the season, where it's like you got to play matches every week. There's no breaks like with tournaments in Counter-Strike, etc. So it's such a period of just like constant grinding, thinking about Overwatch all the time, playing so much that like it really takes a toll on you. And we're seeing that with these careers in Overwatch, that like they only last usually like, you know, 3 to 5 years. And that's when people are like, holy shit, I can't do this anymore. It's so exhausting. It's,
I mean,
so
3 to 5 is still definitely on the high end, honestly.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, for sure. Yeah,
that's definitely the high end.
But also, I mean, part of that is just the turnover we've had in terms of talent. Like, every year, it just seems that there's crazier young talent coming up and replacing the older generation. But in terms of like Super and Jonak, people like these, like, they're just, they've been grinding so long now that it's just natural for them to quit. But it's another thing you can appreciate about Overwatch League players, just like,
yeah,
because it really tells you how much time they put into the game.
But one of the crazy things about Overwatch as well, though, is how good the rookie players are, because you wouldn't get turnover like this if the rookie players were bad, because you just stick with the more experienced players and they would be able to take it a little more chill because they wouldn't have that constant pressure from below, from the tier 2 scene, from the contender scene. And it's mad because the tier 2 scene is not good in this game at all in terms of being well supported or well rounded. It's a bit of a shell, and yet it still produces elite talents every single year, and it's a fucking good job it does as well, because the Shulk have got 5 of them heading into next season, so they're really hoping that story continues for Overwatch 2.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting like point that Johnny brought up. It's like, I think a great example of like relevant to right now is like Speedily coming in for, you know, the Atlanta Reign spoilers, that like his Echo is like, if you're an Overwatch League player who's been playing this game forever, Speedily has been tier 2 grinding Echo for the last like, what, like year or ever since Echo came out. And it's really hard for an Overwatch League player to keep up with that while also competing in not an Echo meta, and like so many things are turning around. So I think that's like one of the big reasons we have so many rookies just consistently coming in and pushing the old guard out, because there's just so much things that you need to practice, so much work. And when you're in the league, you have that extra pressure on top of you as well as performing week in, week out. And to Johnny's point of like with the CSGO thing is like, I think one of the biggest problems with the league, at least from what I experienced as well, and probably one of the reasons Super retired, was in CSGO, they have like LAN events. You sort of like ramp up, you have the qualifiers, and then you do the big LAN event for like a week or two. While in Overwatch League, we're about to go into a 6-month season. If Super commits to that, for 6 months, he has to leave where he is, move from like, you know, Texas, wherever he is, come to LA, play for 6 months, grind his heart out. And there, you can't really do anything outside of that. You can't have effective relationships. You can't stream full time. You can't do any of these things. And I think that's ultimately what leads a lot of these players to retire is once you lose that passion and that grind to be like, I want to be the best player in the world and I want to win championships, it's kind of over. There's no coming back from that because you're just going to slowly teeter out and fizzle out in the league. And we've seen so many players do that as well instead of retiring.
All right, well, let's put a cap on this particular section. Let's put a we've put the bottle cap on the Super Cola and we put it back in. And let's go to the next movement here. Thinking about the players moving forward now from Super. You sort of hinted at it a little bit, Custom, but it's a different team. So Kaluj has joined the league to replace Super as the tank, or presumably to replace Super, maybe just more of an off-tank move than a main tank move for the Shock. There is some history behind this player. And I think for the most part, in my opinion, it seems like the public view has shifted to where no one's really mad about this sign anymore, but there was some, like, I think about 2 years, was it 2 years ago now, I believe, where he was supposed to sign for the Titans and he was rejected by the league. Like, the league said, no, you can't sign Kaluj. Now, correct me if I'm wrong here.
I feel I like I heard that got debunked.
Well, I think the league denied they did that, but also it may have been one of the scenarios where Titans were like, you know, doing a bit of a temperature check and it was like, the water's a bit hot, wouldn't stay there. And they're like, okay, all right, get the hint. You know, I think the league literally said that we've never denied an application for this guy. I think I read that somewhere recently.
I heard that as well, I think, from somebody.
I'm not sure. A comment from John Spector, I think it was, but I don't have the source to hand now, so I can't exactly
remember. Either the Titans or the league, though. One of the two parties like said, like, okay, when the initial signing was supposed to happen to the Titans, they said one of those two parties were like, no, we're not going to. But the thing is, it would be weird if it was Titans after they were going to sign him anyways. But either way, like, right, he wasn't signed. He wasn't signed, yeah. Likely due to some sort of public pressure or external pressure in some way just because of his history. Because for those that aren't aware, he does have a little bit of a history of like, but realistically at this point, I think it was like close to like 3 years, like 2-3 years ago in his time in Contenders, of like being a player that, you know, was known for some toxicity, saying some like offensive things. And now it's kind of like revamped around where people feel like that he's, in my opinion, at least for looking from it, it's people think that he's reformed, you know, he's had his time and maybe none of the stuff that he did had been misattributed or wasn't nearly as bad as like some other players that have got received a lot more backlash. Like, I don't know what everyone else's thoughts on this. Like, is Kaluj reformed? Is he someone that's willing to be given a shot here on a team first and foremost?
Well, you can never prove that you aren't going to do those kind of things again. You can't prove that you've changed in that sense. The only evidence is that you don't do those kind of things again. You know, you can't undo them. Once you've said those kind of things and demonstrated that your attitudes to that are hateful in some sense, then you can't counter that by being loving or something. It doesn't work to undo those actions. But what you can do is demonstrate for a significant period of time that you aren't engaging in that kind of activity, that you're remorseful for it, and that you understand that it was that it was inappropriate, and commit to not doing it in the future, which it seems the dude's done. And you'd rather be in a position, in my opinion, as a community, where you're happy to give people the benefit of the doubt until they reoffend, rather than just exclude people based on an instance that happened many years ago. I think the opportunity for education and reform is going to be better in situations like this. There are some heinous acts where I'd be like, no, fuck off, get out forever. Yeah. But I think this is one of them where you want to be pursuing that avenue of hoping the guy has actually learned from it.
Now you go first.
No, go on.
All right. I actually was like, I didn't know a lot about the history of collusion, that kind of stuff. When the thing came out, people were like, oh, he's the worst from this situation. I'm like, okay, well, let's read about it. Almost everything that he did and all these negative things that happened were from 2018 and 2019. He served a ban, I think, for boosting at some point, like early in 2019. He did his time. I think, as Josh said, he hasn't really been a repeat offender of a lot of the toxicity that came up in 2018. At some point, you got to give people, you know, an opportunity at redemption. And I think he's been gone for a while. I think it's good to get his opportunity. And as Josh said, if it comes up again, then at that point, that's sort of like the nail in the coffin. But until that repeat offender happens, I think you got to give him a chance.
Yeah, and I think people just in general were very wary of Kalush as a figure because of there were so many like accusations going around. And, you know, we have that comment from Watchful where he summarizes like what he did do and what he didn't do, the one shown on screen right now. And I think a lot of people were just like wary of this pair in general because there was so much conflicting information. You know, you browse Reddit comments. There's of course, like never a great source in general when like discussing a player, what they've done, etc. So like laying out the facts here, what he's done and what he hasn't done is like very helpful in that regard. Now, there are things he has done in 2018, 2019 that were like really shitty, that were like things that shouldn't be accepted and that shouldn't be tolerated. Absolutely. But it's been 4 years since then. And I think moving forward, this player has a chance to actually like prove that they've learned from their mistakes and that they are not the player they were 4 years ago in that sense. So I think moving forward, obviously, there will be like some cautiousness about this player, like embracing this player and making sure that Kalush has actually learned from his mistakes and moved on in that way. But I think it's helpful to understand that some of the bad energy, I can't come up with the word, like surrounding this player was actually like based on accusations that weren't things he had done initially. So that being said, you know, with knowing what was true about him, I think maybe that helps people get a bit of a better picture of who this player is and who can be moving forward.
Yeah, the waters were definitely
he is
muddy,
also,
I think. Go ahead, Josh.
Yeah. He is a very, very talented player, though. And yeah. And he's one of the players that you're happy if you're a Shock fan, I think, that has been brought in to fill Super shoes. There's not really anybody that's going to be able to inspire the same level of confidence that Super would have heading into Overwatch 2. But Kalush is extremely skilled, very flexible. I think he's the kind of player that looks great to be heading into the new role for Overwatch 2. Does he have the same level of personability and charisma that's going to be able to carry the entirety of the content? I don't know about that. I don't think you're going to be able to find the perfect fit in terms of... But in terms of like a rookie player that could come in and be on the same level as the other rookie guys that you've brought in from O2 Blast, for example, yeah, this is looking like a really good addition late in the offseason as well. Most of the time, I think most teams, they would not have been able to find a replacement like this at this point in the season. There just aren't that many people out there that who are a great fill if you end up being in an unfortunate situation like the Shock find themselves in right now.
Well, it's still a question of, I think, when we look at Kalush, now that we've sort of examined the history and you've introed like the flexibility of Kalush, let's talk about how he fits into the roster here for the Shock. So you mentioned his flexibility in his skill, right? So something that I primarily seen from Kalush is that it's almost exclusively been off tank in his career. He's been a primarily off tank player. He has done like, I think he's like flex on the main tank here and there. But as far as I'm aware, he's been mostly an off-tank player. He's been a very, very talented off-tank player. And technically, Shock didn't have an off-tank player. They just only had Super, right? So when we look forward to the season with Super being gone and Kalush presumably maybe only being their only tank player, but they might sign another, right? But just let's go into the assumption that if Kalush remains the solo tank player for Shock, and that was their system heading forward, do we feel confident that Kalush is going to be flexible enough and have the ability to like flex on the main tanks when possible? And also, because Super was a leader for this team, is he going to be able to fill that leadership position? Like, how is he going to solve some of these problems for the Shock?
Well, the leadership position, I have no idea about. I don't know that to the slightest. Does anyone have any insight there?
I think it's regardless of how leadership oriented you are, it's going to be hard as a rookie Western player coming into like coming with a lot of players who are, you know, rookie Korean players. I think it's going to be hard to have that, you know, pick up that mantle and sort of like lead the team to victory kind of and command that respect like Super would have. But, you know, I don't really know personally much about Kalush's like impact in like team comms and like team structure, but I am a little worried about the main tank stuff. You know, like, as you said, we've never seen him play Winston or Wrecking Ball, but you know, that's a question for Overwatch 2 more than anything.
Yeah, I think more as the offseason has gone down and we get closer to the season, I'm like really worried about some of these teams that only have either one main tank or one off tank, because it feels to me that you're going to inevitably end up on some maps and you're going to be completely outclassed by the opposite tank of the other team on some maps, whether it favors like a Sigma, D.Va kind of presence, or whether that's like some apps where you just like naturally play a lot of Reinhardt. You know, that could be like Oasis University, stuff like that. Like those kind of rounds and maps. Like if you're an off-deck player and you don't fully understand how to play Reinhardt at the highest level, I think you'll honestly just get fucking destroyed. You'll just get run over by some of these teams. And that's a huge crutch. That's a huge disadvantage for some of these teams. And I think similarly, you're going to end up on some maps where if you're a main tank specialist and you don't necessarily have the chops to play D.Va, Sigma, or even Zarya at like a really high level, I think that's going to be a huge crutch for your team. And I think you're going to be at a very big disadvantage. You'll have to shape your compositions you play accordingly. And so for Kalush here, I don't know like how he's going to be able to contribute on Reinhardt and Winston on some maps like Super could. I think Super is one of those players, based on what we've seen from him earlier, even like, you know, very early on, like 2018, 2019, that he had the mechanical skill to flex onto some of these heroes, whether it's like in ranked, you know, fight for like the number one rank spot, playing D.Va, stuff like that. Like he could do that. So he could flex over to those heroes, Roadhog. But when it comes from Kalush, I don't know how he can flex over to the main tank heroes and how that's going to hurt Shock in the Overwatch League this season.
I think it comes down to even more than that too, honestly, which is, yeah, I think Kalush is about the best that they could have done in this situation, considering how, you know, last minute it is and that kind of stuff. But you now have a team full of rookies where the only player that even keeps any semblance of that like Shock system alive is a player who is presumably going to be playing main support whenever you need a main support to be played. I mean, Violet isn't even going to be on his most well-known role unless you're playing double flex support, which I mean, that could well be the meta for, you know, more than half of the season. That could be the case. But is Violet also a leadership figure? Violet was like the last addition to the Shock and a player that took a while to actually, you know, like fit into their system when he first got added. He wasn't the glue player that held the Shock together. That's the guy that you just lost. So I don't see this team having any of the identity left of that old team. I think Super was the one piece that was holding that thread together. That ship of Theseus was being held together by Super's presence. And now it is just a completely different ship other than the coaching staff, really. And I think they've essentially just got to kind of start again. Like, this team is just a brand new team, but with Violet's name on it, maybe not even his role attached to it. So this is severely affected where I think the Shock is going to be placing in the season. And it's not a knock on Kalush's talent, but it's just, it makes me feel less confident about the team's success overall if they don't have Super's leadership and Super's flexibility and Super's main tank ability and Super's understanding of how these team systems and understanding of how to win and teaching these rookies and teaching Sam and anybody else that they had added to the team who's a Western player how to win and how to perform underneath Krusty.
On that ship of thesis theory, though, I think it's really interesting that I think Shock is one of the few teams in the league that has actually like established like an identity and a brand as a franchise, like as a team. They are not bound to the players that are on their roster and like the influences that those players have on their roster. Obviously, it's a big change, like you're saying, where you have a bunch of rookies coming in. Some of them have played together before in contenders. But if you look at some other teams, like they just pick up talent and like they're starting fresh. They're starting new, trying to make it in the Overwatch League. When it comes to the Shock and having Krusty, who's like the most legendary coach in the scene, and you're coming into this two-time champion kind of franchise, I think some of those rookies, and this is just hypothetical, you know, just thinking out loud. Like, I think as a rookie, you're more prone coming into the Shock and being coached by Krusty to have a sense of like respect for the environment and the team you're coming into, and perhaps be a bit more open to feedback, open to how they do things, open to routine, stuff like that, because of the success they've had and because how much people respect Krusty in that regard. So I hope maybe that can aid these rookies coming into the league a little bit and maybe hitting their stride faster in that regard.
I do want to hit on that note though as well. The thing that I'm worried about for this team is that, like, as you said, the brand is on the team, but the brand is success, right? Like their whole brand is built on winning matches. And last season we already saw when they don't win matches, their fans, okay, sorry, Shock fans, you're kind of crazy. And like everyone else, like in that team, when they start losing matches that people think they shouldn't lose or that they have these expectations that they're a championship caliber team, this is obviously a team that, as Josh said, isn't really any semblance of the shock that we've known from the 2019-2020 season. They have so many rookies, and I think I'm a little worried that if they start slow, especially if they end up in a, like a main support, main tank meta, right? Let's say we end up in like a Winston Lucio meta for whatever reason. If they start losing and these rookies aren't able to get traction early, I'm a little worried that it might derail them a little. They obviously have just like a ridiculous amount of talent. I think they have some of the best rookies that they you could have picked up going into the season, but there's a lot of, I guess, question marks around this roster that gives me a little bit of hesitation to get hyped up on the Shock.
Yeah.
Did you see though?
What?
Sorry, I just wanted to. There was an article. Damn it! I keep getting reminded about things that I've seen recently and didn't prep before the episode. There was an article somewhere. Let me see if I can jog someone else's memory. I think it was an interview that was done recently with somebody behind the scenes on the Shock talking about how they were planning to stay flexible for the season, and that they had deliberately not gone with signing a big roster this year.
Was it Chris, the GM?
I mean, probably that sounds about right, but I can't. It doesn't specifically ring any bells.
I do think there was an article where, like, they discussed team building with a lot of different teams.
Yes, I think it was that one. But there was specifically a quote from the Shock in there. If you can find it and send it to Kurt, I'd love to give credit to whoever was writing it to.
I think I found it. I'll link it to the live chat.
Because I think it had, from what I can remember off the top of my head, I think it had a quote saying that they're specifically trying to keep their roster small at the beginning so that they have the flexibility to be able to make mid-season signings so that they're not going like crazy with their budget, you know?
Was this it?
Possibly. I've read a lot of Overwatch League articles. You know, people think that I'm just lost in the Valorant source, but I do read all of the articles that happen. I just don't remember everything that's inside of them. So it was this article actually. Yeah, because I remember reading this quote from the Gladiators too. But there is a comment in here at some point for the Shock, I think, and it was talking about trying to keep their roster open as possible so that they would be flexible. And the idea there being that they have a small roster right now, but they would be able to make signings to increase this level of flexibility down the road. And I don't think that they... this roster is never going to be bad, though. Like, any roster where you can get proper playing 100% of the time is not going to be bad. They're not going to be suffering. They've got a talented roster with three players from O2 Blast that won back-to-back contender seasons. They're a nasty good team. It's just they might not be the best or even hunting for the best.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the big thing for me as well, is like, we have to really test, you know, you brought up the idea of the Shock system. I felt like the Shock system was already kind of under pressure last year. Like, the way when we thought we're like, oh, like the Shock system is always going to be, it's always going to produce, going to give me a lump of coal and give me a fucking diamond. I felt like that diamond was kind of half polished last year. It's not that Shock was bad. Shock was a really good team, but was it like the Shock that had won 2 Overwatch League seasons? Like, I don't really think so necessarily, right? And some people attribute that to, like, well, we didn't have the support. They didn't have the support staff, right? They didn't have all these assistant coaches that have been working with Krusty to help him plan out all his Machiavellian coaching schemes and things and, like, put his order onto the roster. And now he's got some of those assistant coaches back. So maybe this is, like, the true test, I think. Like, when you think about it, it's a fully rookie roster, essentially, minus Violet. A fully rookie roster. Like, so how does a staff take this team and try to put them in the expectations of the Shock and see, like, how they perform in a game like Overwatch 2, where we're going to have drastically changing metas, probably new heroes arriving all the time, fingers crossed, please God. And, you know, like, you know, all these other things showing up, where this is going to be a true test, I think, for a team that has, like, the Shock history and is supposed to have the system of, like, can you actually put a system in place for this team? So if we have any closing comments, otherwise we need to head over to the next thing, which actually is probably, Scott, you mentioned it, but we didn't actually put it on the list yet because we forgot to put it on the list, because I want to touch on it at least, which is the Speed Elite signing for the Atlanta Reign. Because they've been hinting on it, and of course, like, they dropped the player announcement on literally the worst possible date in esports, April 1st. They announced Speed Elite on April 1st. It was a funny joke. I mean, it was, but it's like, surely you have to know, like, at the very least, don't put the announcement on April 1st. Like, and the they way, literally had to do a second announcement.
April 1st just gobbles knobs in esports. It's just It's horrendous. It is an awful, awful date in esports. The Twitter stuff, the videos, the fake signings, people thinking they're funny. It's a day where everyone thinks they're a comedian, and it's painfully awful.
The fake signings is the worst. I think the fake signings are by far the worst because they're never like... It's always just like her, der, this. Think about if we had this person, you know, versus like it's never like anything I feel like particularly clever.
I like New York Excelsior's tweet. I like the Sigma Toe stuff.
Johnny, you got fun. Got.
I did, oh, but Johnny, not that.
You literally that. Fell for it.
Not Johnny, you stuff. Posted a tweet saying I got by something. What did you get got by?
I was actually the Speedly thing because I thought it was real and then they announced it the day after. Which, you know, I got for 24 hours.
But it was real. It was real.
Yeah, but you know, on April 1st, it wasn't real.
Yeah.
Because it was a joke. But then on April 2nd, it was real.
I feel like it's real.
Maybe it was real the whole time, but it's real. A joke.
They don't change. Yes, they just.
Think they thought that was a joke on April 1st, but then it actually, like the social media guy got told on April 2nd, actually, that thing that you made a joke about.
They did a follow up tweet April 2nd. Yeah, like.
Because everyone thought it was a joke, because it was stupid to announce it. No, the issue isn't that it was a it was just that it was dumb to put the announcement on April 1st. Yeah. That was the problem. It was always.
But did I get caught or did I not get caught? I asked.
I don't think you got caught.
I don't think you got caught. I think you've gotten yourself, pal. Like, I think that's the issue here. You're overthinking this way too much. It's speedily signed. It's a fact. It's real.
April 1st myself. Great.
Yes, you did. You April 1st. So let's talk speedily. So for people who aren't aware, it's a really huge news. Essentially, Brad Rajani, I used to make this joke where Brad Rajani, the head coach of the Reign, the Sefi, I always made the joke that he was running like, he was looking to make like Brad Rajani's gifted and talented kids emporium for like Overwatch League, where like he was always wanting to sign like the most, like the youngest, like most cracked players and just like put them on all the roles. And like that's what he always wanted to do scouting wise. He has a knack for finding talent. Not that really speedily had to be found, but this is like essentially completing the NA Exodia of just like all the fucking Angry Titans play, or not Angry Titans, but rather American Tornado American players, Tornado, like Redbird play. Yeah. I always mix up with Angry Titans.
Same. I mean, it's just AT, isn't it?
It's AT. But this is like the last like really big free agent to like grab from that roster from North America, and is kind of known as an Echo Prodigy. So let's discuss how this affects the Reign here a little bit. Like, how do we feel like this signing affects the Reign's chances moving in? And should people be really hyped about this?
When does he come of age? August, late August.
August 26th. That's what I was going to bring up. It's not like he's about to turn 18.
They just changed the rules to where now they can sign a player this young where they couldn't before.
But what? So he's only going to be available for playoffs.
No. Countdown Cup as well.
You need to remember, like, I think some people get it like shocked about the August. It's like, that's so late in the season. Remember, we're starting at the beginning of May. Like, it's only really like 3 and a bit months, like, thing. Obviously, not ideal, but he will be able to play at least like the back half of the season. It's not like Atlanta Reign is in desperate need of speedily. They got Kai, Nero, and Venom. Like, they're chilling for the most part, but it'll definitely be a power up when speedily can come to this roster. Has a lot of experience with these players, and he is just bonkers on some of these heroes if you've seen him play.
Shit, he's good. Yeah. He's insanely good. And also, this is the role where it changes the game for their DPS line, I think. I mean, Nero, I've been a fan of Nero. I think he was a player that when he played for like the Charge, for example, he was really on the come up, showcasing what he was made of. Didn't play that year in the World Cup, but looked like the best flex DPS that North America had available at the time. But this team has got, like, Venom is going to be cracked in his kind of like, you know, Tracer role, assuming that that's going to be a somewhat standard for the year. Kai is insanely good in long range hit scan. And then you've got Speedily, who's going to be just a fucking nutcase on the flex DPS kind of roles. That is a scarily good DPS line. And that has just been the Atlanta Reign to a T for so long. But it feels like last season they figured out how to get the rest working, and they still have Gator, Hawk there, and a good support line. So
a great support,
I thought Speedily was only available for playoffs. I hadn't looked at the schedule. I didn't realize it was also the final stage too. This,
I don't know if it's official. This is based on Liquipedia, dangerous, by the way. So I don't know if it's official, but according to Liquipedia, Countdown Cup is like in September or something. It's crazy. Mm-hmm. So you know, and based on like the comments early on, I think the Countdown Cup is like part of like the road to playoffs or something like that. So maybe that helps if they're struggling. But I don't expect this roster to struggle. Like it's a crazy good roster. So when I made it like Houston Outlaws thing, like top four, or whatever, you know, it's funny because one team eventually has to go and, you know, who knows what team that's going to be. I thought like maybe Atlanta Reign is one of those teams that maybe drop off, they lose Pelican. But with Speedily like into the mix, this roster is like set up perfectly for a deep kind of playoffs run when that comes around. And hopefully if they can adopt some kind of different compositions, because, you know, we're actually doing an Atlanta Reign preview, so we don't need to, you know, go too deep about it later. But one of the big issues last year was that they had to primarily play like the double shield kind of compositions, play a lot of the Reign compositions, and they took that into playoffs and it worked for them. They made it their own and that's what they specialized in, and they were able to beat some of these teams. But those circumstances, that environment in which they succeeded in, we might not have the same environment for Overwatch 2. How's that going to function? 5 versus 5? What's the meta going to look like, etc.? So the big question mark is, can they be able to play some of these divey compositions, whether that's, you know, Wrecking Ball, Winston, Doomfist, etc.? But when it comes to like the DPS lineup and stuff like that, like the talent is there. The mechanical skill is insane. Speedily is frustratingly good. There are a few players coming up from contenders that are frustratingly good, where they are so good that they take over the game and they ruin your ability to research any other player. So like, if you want to study a flex support and the DPS player just takes over the game, you're like, well, I mean, I didn't see the Ana do anything great because they just like pocketed their Genji and the Genji killed everyone. And so Speedily was one of those players. Like, whenever you try to study some of the other players on his teams, he just like, oh, I got a 5k on Echo and sorry, like you couldn't do anything. So, you know, I don't know what his teammates did because he just carried the game. So, amazing player. He's going to be so good for them.
Okay, so the consensus is he's pretty poggers, one could say. He's pretty poggers. And I think that seems to be the consensus.
You're really taking it to the hosting role, man.
I am. He's pretty poggers. It's natural. So it's overall a good thing for the Atlanta Reign. You should be excited if you're a Reign fan heading forward. And when he's eligible to actually play, which will be, you know, the latter half of the season, midway through the season, somewhere around there, like, he will be of huge addition to this roster. And also something to note is that if from a roster building, like GME perspective, like, sure, he might not be able to play that whole time, but also it means that like he's locked down for the Reign and he can't go anywhere else. You know, like, yeah, they made sure he can't go onto another opposing team. They're going to have him locked down, which is pretty big from like a GME perspective. So like overall a pretty good signing. I think it's finally time for the Brad Rajani like child soldier army to pop off, where they just like find like the youngest, most talented players and get them under contract. And it's perfect for Overwatch 2, where it's gonna be a very DPS centric game. And the mechanics,
he's gonna like sign Heesung in like July, just like next year. Sorry.
Okay, so I just wanted to touch on Speedily since it was a signing that we didn't have on the run of show, but like it was a big signing. It's something that's interesting for Reign. So if you're a Reign fan, you should be excited. You should be hyped for Speedily getting that player on that roster. So, but moving forward, we do have another big topic, which is we got a bracket. We got the best Overwatch teams of all time bracket, in fact. And you know that we love just putting shit on a bracket and ranking it and just talking about it. And everyone mauls about our rankings. And this is perfect for us. This is perfect.
It is incredible.
So many people mad.
I know. I can't even remember some of these, by the way. I want to put that out there right at the beginning. Some of these, I've forgotten how good they were.
Can I, before we move on, can I just give credit to Reddit user Waddles0203 for making this bracket, by the way. They did it on Reddit like 3 weeks ago. I just want to give Waddles credit. Thank you for making this bracket, and we can use it for content.
You're my boy, Waddles.
Waddles.
Oh, so you
Where do we want to begin?
Oh, it says bottom left. Anyway.
I guess from like top to bottom, maybe?
Before we start, before we run into this old chestnut again, are we saying relevant to their time? Avast, that we're doing. So I'm not going to put the 2021 Dragons versus the 2018 Glads and expect Big Goose and Chaz to be like, sup, we got this.
I think for this argument, we probably, because like it's fair, the outcomes are fairly predictable if we just do it based off like pure power scale. But if we do it based off relative, then...
But I would say relative to their time, it just comes down to, did they finish first in the tournament? If yes, they win. So like... I think, for example, if you look at top left, 2020 Shock versus 2019 Spark, it's a more interesting conversation. I mean, it's kind of not interesting either way because you just have to put the Shock through. But the 2020 Shock one in their time, and they're a more recent team. The only time you're going to get an interesting conversation is if somebody won in an earlier year.
Well, it's like MYXL, so then the one below it. Look at 2020 Fusion versus 2018 MYXL. Like, I think 2020 mechanically, the Fusion, like, think about how good those players were in 2020, but it's 2018 MYXL. Like, they dominated.
Also, what's like the meta definitions we're using here? Like, because that also changes the calculation. Like, what is the baseline meta we're all going to be competing in?
I don't think there is one. I think you just have to take what they were playing at the time, I guess.
Well, but the 2020 never was playing the same thing.
You could add a spike, just like a little mix of just like flexibility in there. Like,
why don't we just start with one of them and we see where it goes, and then we set some rules if they're required.
I mean, this is going to be a fucking shit show, but let's go top to bottom, left to right.
Okay,
so let's start with the Shock Spark. 2020 Shock versus 2019 Spark.
Can I begin here? I actually really like the 2019 Spark. I might be the only person that remembers the 2019 Spark.
I like the 2019 Spark. Yeah, I like them.
They're good.
Yeah.
Okay, all right. Rear okay, people. People like them. The fucking Adora Brig or whatever they were playing at the time as well. And Rio playing D.Va, he was actually looking pretty decent at the time. But there's no world in which you can argue they're better than the 2020.
Yeah, I mean, I like them, but I mean, they're going to get fucking steamrolled by the Shock. So put the Shock up. Yeah.
The Shock has a wild card in Revenge on the bench, the flex support that play like an hour. But, you know, I don't think that's enough.
Okay, so now this is where it starts to get more interesting. 2020 Fusion versus 2018 NYXL.
What is this Fusion roster? This is the Fusion roster with Sado.
Stonks through the roof, by the way. Sado stonks through the roof.
That was one hell of a front line. You got Alarm in the back line with Funny Astro. And for DPS, you got Carpe, EQO, Hisu.
And Ivy. Mm-hmm.
And Ivy. Yeah. And so towards the end of the season, right, they played a lot of like Sombra Genji in like Countdown Cup, stuff like that. I think they made the stage finals twice. They lost to Paris in Summer Showdown. They lost to Shock in the Countdown Cup.
They had a better regular season record than the Shock did that year.
They went 24-2
in North America.
24-2
pounded. This team would beat 2018 at NYXL.
Yeah. I'm a 2018 NYXL simp, as you guys know, but I agree. I think this 2020 Fusion, like, I feel like it gets underrated just on the back that in the playoffs they kind of like they went to that Final Four playoffs thing and they just kind of got bodied pretty hard, but they were very good in this season.
I mean, wait, we haven't even taken this matchup from the standpoint of a New York Excelsior fan. Like, what are we doing here? This is the most dominant team arguably in the history of the league. Jonak MVP revolutionized the way you play the game. The positioning of this team, the movement, the map control, glorious. I mean, I feel like we're doing them a little bit dirty here by just automatically moving Fusion to the next round.
I think the boss hates Jonak. I think that's
no, the only thing it's that not. It's really not. It's like, I think our minds are tinged by the time, you know? And that's the problem, right? We've left this ambiguous and now we're going to hear argued about the ambiguity. But like myself, like I will almost always take a modern team over one of the older teams, like almost always, just because the level of the game improves so much. Like, was 2018 really New York so good? Yes, they were fucking amazing in 2018. So, like,
okay, but
it's
also
because they beat them in stage three. It's because they beat Boston in stage three. I've asked Holzer
Grudge. That's it.
Let's actually compare them like for like, though, in terms of their time. The record for NYXL in that incredibly dominant regular season, they went 34-6. Remember, they played 40 games. What was the record for Philadelphia Fusion in the regular season? It was even better, wasn't it?
22-4.
22. They went 24-2.
24-2. Sorry, yeah.
24-2.
Even better. That's even better regular season dominance than the NYXL. It just wasn't dominant to the same degree because there was still the Shock doing the same kind of thing. So, can you really be dominant if there's two teams who are dominant? I would argue, within the format, they were.
But to play devil's advocate, that was the 2020 season, which was just a straight up hot mess. And I'm pretty sure Fusion were in NA when there were like the Houston Outlaws and the Boston Uprising and then like whatever the Vancouver Titans became, right? Like there was a lot of bad teams that I feel like they bodied for free
Are you saying there weren't in 2018?
Yeah.
NYXL had 40 games, and some of them were against Shanghai, some of them were against Florida, some of them were against just piles of turd out there.
I'm trying to help NYXL here, you know, just a little bit. Like, I agree. Like, the quality of play year on year just gets better and better and better. And that's why this, like, whole thing, our Madness 2022, is very tainted, as Avast likes to say. But the 2018 team was very, very good, but the 2020 Fusion is just like, it was nasty.
Okay, one more thing. New York Excelsior in 2018, they lost narrowly stage one to London Spitfire. I think there was a 7-map series after London went like the full distance in like the early round two. They won stage two against Philadelphia Fusion in a reverse sweep. They beat Boston Uprising in stage three, and I think they made the finals against the Valiant in stage four. They made all four stage finals. They won two of them. Yeah, Custa actually beat them, unlike you have asked. So, well, I hate to see it.
I had a perfect stage.
So they made all four stages, and they won two of them. And then they bombed out in the playoffs early.
Okay.
Yeah, but cool. I guess we're going to Fusion. Okay. Well,
right?
Yeah.
Now, this one is interesting to me. So 2019 Titans versus 2021 Hunters. Now, this is interesting to me because if this was GOATS meta, Titans would dominate the Hunters. Yeah, Titans would literally roll and smoke the Hunters a million times. Like, but if it's the meta that we were playing in like 2021 or more divey meta, like, then it starts getting like that's when we start running into the issues here. Because there's sometimes we just look at it like, okay, sure. But baseline, the 2019 Titans were fucking incredible at the meta they played, you know? And also, there's really, if they had time to stick together, they could have been better outside of that as well.
But here's an interesting thought experiment. What if the 2019 Titans had stuck together? What if Vancouver Titans were not a dogshit organization and actually that team had managed to survive? And so you had, you know, you have Bumper playing, by the way, Bumper won Overwatch Contenders in Korea playing Winston, so it's not like he was a Reinhardt one trick as some people seem to believe.
Yeah,
but, I mean, he was okay, like a fraggy like Winston.
Yeah. He had a very aggressive Winston, I will agree.
But also, like, that was like, who knows how it would have adjusted over a longer season if he had been playing it, right? Like, we didn't really get to see any.
Or they would have replaced him in 2 years, right? Yeah. Like, it might not have been the exact same roster, but let's imagine it was the same roster. You got Bumper, you got Haxal, you've got Twilight in that back line. You've got
Slime
there as well, who, yeah, didn't have a great recent season. but he did look great at the time, so maybe he would have continued to.
But who knows what would have changed if he had kept in the same system, right? Versus,
but I think if you compare them like for like, the obvious place that they slip up is just the lack of a God Tracer player compared to Leave, who was just running that team.
But it's not like
they have a bad roster. Even
but also, Stitch was really good at Tracer still. Like, he just wasn't a god Tracer. Like, I feel Stitch
he was not on the level of like Striker.
But I feel like when we look back at his career post Titans, like at Stitch, he still had some very good moments. You know, like Stitch.
The long range hit playoffs for Washington Justice was very strong.
Yeah, like I think Stitch. I definitely wouldn't put him at like the top of my list here by any means, but like I'm like, okay, like he's definitely, I think he could be competitive, but there's very few players that are like able to go toe-to-toe with Leaf, you know, like there are very, very few. So, and then like Haxel, I'm perfectly fine putting Haxel versus like, you know, Jinmu, you know, I think I'm perfectly content with
not
that.
Versus Leaf.
In terms of the flex DPS, like when I think of it, like flex DPS, like Haxel, I think if he had been able to actually play flex DPS would have been really good. But they never really had the chance to do so. I think their tank line is interesting because Bumper was like potentially replaceable. Janu was really good in the system and had some good moments after, but wasn't really that impressive outside of Hog for that one stage, you know? So I'm like, were they just a product of their meta? But it's tough to answer from there. I think this is the problem, right? It's like, if it's GOATS, Titans win. If it's not GOATS, I put Hunters. So,
but like, even if it's like not GOATS, like 2021 Hunters, like remember they played Pharah, like 80% of the time, it feels like, at least in my mind. Like they every time the Hunters, 2021 Hunters, tried to play not Farah, like especially going to the playoffs, they weren't that good of a team. Obviously, they still had Leave just absolutely pounding everybody. Yeah. But other than that, I think the rest of their players could not play around that Farah meta very well at all. So like that's sort of like the one thing holding me back from just saying like 2021 Hunters is because like I think the 2019 Titans were way more well-rounded and they could have played a lot of other things, while this 2021 Hunters team I think actually has a lot of holes in it.
You know, especially with their coaching. If 2021 Hunters were using Eamon and he could out Chad Bumper in the Ryan 1v1, then maybe I'd give it to the Hunters.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like here for the Hunters too, it's like you have to be like, yes, there were holes in this roster, but they were like the best team in APAC while having gigantic gaping holes still at points.
Besides Dragons. Say the 20
besides Dragons. I'd say, well, actually, I guess Seoul. Never mind. They weren't the best team in APAC, really. Like, there was Seoul, too. Seoul had good moments. So, like,
they had variability.
They were one of the best teams, one of the top three teams in APAC, despite having huge gaping holes. And okay, this is what also, remember, in a competitive year.
What about if you compare them to their time period? Do you just have to give it to the Titans?
Yeah.
Yeah,
I think you do. Vancouver was one of those teams that I remember in 2019. I was not the biggest Vancouver Titans fan, but they were so good at the time, especially the first two stages, that I found it literally boring to watch them play because they were so dominant. Like they, especially because we had so many bad GOATS teams back then. Like people don't remember all these shitty GOATS teams. They were so god awful to watch. Oh my god. Horrible watch. And Titans would just walk into the server and just dominate them. Like just walk over them. It was not even competitive. It was so disengaging and it was boring. It was like, oh, you know, if you want to appreciate like Bumper messing around, like charging all over the map, and you know, maybe Twilight popped off for a little bit, and you know, here's a Huxel, whatever. Like, sure, you know, it was meme-y, it was fun, but like the competitive offness, it was boring how good the Titans were. So I gotta give them that.
I'd give it to Titans too. I'll give it to Titans as well, if also just because even though this is too ambiguous, it's gonna make Hunters fans mad, and I always like that. So like, let's sure, Hunter, put it to Titans. Let's go. So 2020 Dragons versus the 2021 Atlanta Reign.
There's no argument here.
Yeah, I think it's got to be Dragons, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I like the flexibility of the Atlanta Reign is going to be the biggest thing that I think all four of us are going to bring up. Like as much as the Reign, they came second, theoretically, they made it to the grand finals against the Dragons. The biggest thing is if you look at their hero play rates, they played like, Shu played like 90% Baptiste or something like that. They really only played Iris. Played that double shield or the Reinhardt Brawl. Like that was really where they thrived, but they didn't really play anything else. And as much as they are a very solid team, 2020 Dragons is very, very, very good.
Yeah. Well, let's just go on. Let's do like the other side of the bracket, and then we'll go back and we'll distill the matches more. So let's start now at the top with 2021 Dragons versus 2018 Glads. Glads fans, I if you have anything to argue about this, I'm sorry. There's nothing. 2021 Dragons. But Dragons, it's just, it's just Dragons. It's just Dragons. I'm like, ooh, the Great Bamboozle. I don't give a fuck about the Great Bamboozle. Like, no. All right, so let's now move into 2021 Fuel versus 2018 Valiant.
Ooh.
I have another easy one for this, but, you know, we'll...
Costanera, famous last words.
Famous last words. Yo, yeah, the Valiant, we were pretty sick at playing Mercy and stuff like that. It 2021 Fuel is just like a better team. As much as 2018 Valiant was good, we were not... We just had a really good meta when we won that stage. We were good. Like, we were a solid team in 2018, but 2021 Fuel, like, I think they should have been the team in the grand finals against the Shanghai Dragons just because of how strong they were throughout the entire year. Like, it's just not close.
Okay, and now to the next matchup, which is what I find particularly funny because it's two teams from the same year. It's 2019 Shock versus 2019 New York. Any takers for the New York argument here? Any takers?
If no one's going to defend them, I will. I forgot how good NYXL were in 2019. I feel like people just talk about the Titans and the Shock, about how they good were at GOATS. But like NYXL had like a really good regular season record. I can't remember exactly what it is now. Let me have
it
a look.
It finished fairly well in the playoffs.
They had a good year. It was like New York was good. 22-6. They just weren't top.
When we were on the desk, we would talk about the big three, meaning Shock, Titans, and NYXL. But then NYXL also had a bit of a wobbly thing where it looked like the Spark might be in there, and then you know, the Dragons from that year ended up winning one of the stages. So NYXL just, they were being measured against their dominance of the previous year, and people were disappointed rather than impressed at how good they were.
Yeah,
I think it's like, it's hard to argue. Like, New York was really, really good. It's just they weren't ever really in contention to necessarily. Also,
let me put it like this. Sorry, let me put it like this. In stage one, New York went 7-0. In stage two, New York went 5-2. In stage three, they went 7-0. So they were not bad.
Yeah.
They were not bad at all. They went good. What? They started the season 19-2.
Pretty good. Now, this one is another really interesting.
Wait, sorry. Before we move on, though.
Oh, okay.
Waddle0203. Why did you have the 2021 reign up against an insanely difficult opponent and then two 2019 teams together? This bracket is unbalanced.
I'm glad they gave us some easy ones, because we could be debating the minutia, and we will be probably in the future for fucking ever. So
we should have power ranked.
She's ripping content and then just flaming the dude they're stealing content from.
Why is your content you've given us so fucking bad, huh? So 2018 Spitfire now versus 2020 Eternal. I think this one's interesting.
I think
this is an interesting one, actually.
So 2018 Spitfire, they win stage one. They had a reasonable regular season, but nothing to write home about particularly. And then they win the entire event, going on a crazy bracket run in the playoffs. And that's versus the Eternal, who had that massive peak in the Genji meta, but honestly didn't do too much else in 2020. I mean, I guess they made like another, what was it, the semifinal or something of the one after that?
Well, didn't they technically... What was it, 2020, where they brought on, like, they revamped their roster, like, halfway through the season, right? Yeah, Did they revamp halfway through the season?
Fielder was playing from...
Or was that the beginning of the season that they brought them on?
But look, in this matchup, look, Fielder, if you're defending the Paris Eternal in this matchup, you're off the goop. Like, get off the internet. Like, you know, do some meditation.
Well,
like,
the thing is, if you were to throw them into a regular season match...
They had one good tournament. Sparkle came in. He was the new shiny toy in the league, and everyone just embraced his personality, his Genji play. They had Fielder, who was, you know, playing at 5 a.m. in Korea or something like that, but that was pretty much it. They bombed out of the playoffs. They were worthless, okay? They had one, maybe two good stages. 2018 Spitfire, legendary team, okay? Gesture Prophet, oh my God, amazing roster.
They were legendary because of their playoffs performance, I feel, more so than their regular season.
They won stage one as well. They won a stage and won the playoffs.
But Eternal won a stage, they just didn't win playoffs, right? Like, the point being is, like, without the playoffs, like, Spitfire, if you took these teams, like, this is the minutia I'm talking about. Anyone remember minutia? Like, if we were to throw them into a regular season match, I don't know. Like, if we take them outside of playoffs, like, when you look at these two teams, like, so that the debate begins, like, where, like, well, when do they play?
Okay, that Genji meta was disingenuous, okay? That was not a representative of the entire
dishonest
season.
Dishonest Genji meta.
Okay, meta. Jonathan, but the 2018 playoffs meta was good, honorable gameplay, was it?
But they at least won a stage. They won a stage playing Widowmaker, Tracer. They showed flexibility. They were good at two different compositions. Hey, that's flexibility, right? That's adaptation, okay? It just proves many different skill sets besides the mechanical skill of this team.
I'm with Johnny. I'm going to defend Johnny's, like, thing. I think the Paris Eternal, they were solid, but I think they were, like, a solid, like, fourth in the season. They had that one great summer showdown where Sparkle went sicko mode on the Genji, but, like, I think 2018 Spitfire, as Johnny said, they won a stage. They made it to the finals of another stage. Like, they had some bonkers back and forth series in 2018. They were consistently the second best team in the league behind NYXL. And then they went on had a playoffs run in 2018 and won the whole thing. Like, I feel like you can't hold the 2020 Eternal to that kind of pedestal. Josh looks upset. Did he disconnect?
As he froze. He's looking even angrier.
Yeah,
he's looking even more angry than he was before.
He's gonna have harsh words with Brent's grandma.
Yeah. Hi. Oh, he's back. You froze at a very angry portion of your camera.
Oh, I'm back.
Yeah, you are. Did you have a rebuttal?
I was really contemplating what you were saying. Well, I was just pondering your comment about them being the, like, second best team of the season, because when I'm thinking about it, I I don't remember them being the second best team of the regular season in 2018. In fact, I remember that being your team, being the Valiant.
Okay, well, see, here's the thing you're misremembering. That's the back half when I was on a good team in the Valiant. And the front half when I was on the Dallas Fuel and I was pushing the dumpster fire that was the Dallas Fuel. The London Spitfire were incredible in those first two stages. Like, as much as they fell off a little bit towards like the third and fourth, but they were still good. Like, they still had a good regular season record. But finishing those two-stage playoffs where they were very through and true fighting for one, we're against NYXL, like, and plus they won the whole grand finals. Like, I feel like you've got to give them way more points for winning the grand final and winning the whole league than the Paris Eternal. It's not like Paris Eternal had more stage wins over the London Spitfire.
Okay, I can get on board with this argument. I'm happy with the 2018 Spitfire.
Honestly, I was always going to go 2018 Spitfire, but I always loved to sow the seeds of dissent. Be like, is it going to be? Is it 2020? Is it 2020? But like, no, I was always
protective of that 2020 Paris Eternal season. Yeah, they're very protective of it.
But I definitely think Spitfire was the better team
because they only blacked out after the Summer Showdown. They watched the Summer Showdown, and then everything else doesn't matter. Like,
yeah, they were just done with it. Well, then now that we finished the early stages of the bracket, let's look inwards. Let's go forward here. So now 2020 Shock. Versus 2020 Fusion. I mean,
it's actually kind of difficult.
It's up in the air because you could coin flip it, but I already have my choice, so I've made my choice.
It kind of has to be Shock, but it is really close. I mean, it was close in the season. The Fusion, I think, had a winning record against them, but then just bombed out of the playoffs.
Yeah. I mean, I think Fusion, very good team. It's just at the end of the day, like many Fusion endeavors, they just kind of, it's Shock just had, they had the going power. They just had the going power there. So do we have any dissent for 2020 Shock?
No.
The eyes have it? So. Okay. Well, now 2019 Titans versus the 2020 Dragons. Now we once again get into a situation of like, what's the fucking meta?
Okay, but I would like to put this forward. Sure. Even if the meta was GOATs, I think there's a possibility...
There's literally no evidence to support that.
No. But what I'm saying is, if you're thinking a year on in the future, is there a world in which this 2020 team actually wins at GOATS as well? So the 2020 team had Fearless. They were an incredibly good rush team too. Fearless was playing really well on the Rhine. Who would they have playing? I guess they'd still have Fledder was, what was he playing? Was he playing Breaking GOATS from what I remember?
Didn't they still have when? I think they had. They still have Youngjin, right? So couldn't they have had Youngjin, Brig, Fledder, Zarya?
No, they had DM playing Zarya.
Oh, yeah.
Fledder was with the Seoul Dynasty at the time.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, he didn't join until 2021.
But I think he was playing Brig at the time. So I guess you'd have like Lip. I don't know. This is no, going.
Fledder
into
was there just, in 2020. He won MVP.
Was he?
Yeah, he won MVP.
No. I'm saying in 2019. In 2019, when GOATS was meta, he was with the Seoul Dynasty. So I know this is like fantasy land, but I could actually see that team with the level of coordination they had and how good they were at rush, which was somewhat similar in terms of like the ideas that you're going for. I could even see this team bringing it to the 2019 Vancouver Titans if you gave them enough time to be like, you know, they had the full year of getting good at GOATS. I'm not writing this team off.
Sure. I mean, the Batman argument of prep time always does lend some weight of like they can defeat any enemy if given enough prep. But I just like, I'm trying to see like, this is the thing. We have to pick a definitive, like, what is our criteria to judge this? I mean, across the board, I'd probably pick 2020 Dragons if I was going like holistically. If I were to pick purely GOATS, I would take the Titans, you know?
Is there any player you'd rather have from the 2019 Titans?
I mean, I'd say like Janu, but then you have Void. And I'm like, no.
Exactly. would you rather have Haxel than Fledder?
Yes, no. On Brig.
On Brig, Haxel's sure.
Brig was good, yeah.
But like,
Brig was insane. But
we're still talking holistically. I do think Haxel's probably the one player I'd be willing to slot into the Dragons, like, to take. But the rest of the players I'd probably keep.
Who was Isaiah for the Dragons? Somitsu was fucking sick in 2019.
Okay, well.
You're telling me Lip couldn't be as good as Somitsu if you gave him some time?
I mean, theoretically.
Lip can do anything. I've accepted at this point that he could just touch anything and be the best at it. So, like, I'm going for 2020 Dragons. Yeah, like, I mean, I'm living in a...
It's completely irrational. I mean, theoretically, in GOATs, Titans would probably still win, but like, who knows? Like, it's holistically, I think 2020 Dragons does win.
Someone is
inevitably going to make the argument that 2019 Titans, they actually played the entire league. They dominated the entire league. They were consistent against the entire league. And meanwhile, Shanghai Dragons, they won a couple of stages between like seven teams, and their main competition was Guangzhou Charge and New York Excelsior.
They went 27-2 though.
Yeah. But, you know,
the Vancouver Titans also made the grand finals.
They played against the London Spitfire of 2020.
Also the Titans were playing against the Washington Justice of 2019.
See, it goes both ways. That's not an argument then. It goes both ways. Yeah.
Like the GOATs teams in North America were so tragic, Josh coined the term time thieves. So, like, they stole time from us, our most valuable resource.
Shanghai would not have gone 27-2 if they had played Philadelphia, San Francisco, Paris that season.
Yeah.
They were not overly way better than them in the regular season, in my opinion.
Yeah, I don't think that's likely. I think they would have added at least another loss onto that, yeah.
Either way,
I don't think they would have been, like, a 50-50 team. I do want to have a slightly different discussion about this arm of the bracket, though, because we were having a debate about 2019 Titans versus 2021 Hunters, and the 2021 Hunters is a fantastic squad. It's an easier comparison as well with the Dragons. Like, if we had made the other decision and the Hunters from this year had gone through to face off in this mystical bracket against the 2020 Dragons, is there a world where you guys are actually predding that team to win? Do you think the addition of Fate pushed them ahead? Do you think that team with, like, Fearless... Is there any argument for the Hunters being better than them at all?
No.
Not even slightly?
Isayaki, no.
I mean, Hunters could cheese them out and take them to the Chengdu zone, as they always do. But like, my biggest problem every time I talk about the Hunters, and it's frustrating, and I hope that they fix this year, is that they have always been a cheese team. Like, they have never played the game straight up. And I think that makes it incredibly difficult to rank them against historical teams, because obviously Leave can hold up against the Shanghai Dragons, but how much can all these other players hold up in different metas and different situations when you're playing a straight up game and you're not just playing Fire Mercy and hope they don't know how to counter it?
Their player capability, the player quality is not the issue. It's more so just like their team play. Like, I feel really confident. Like, if you're going to post up Evil-Tool versus like Legion Gone, I'm like, yeah, like they can definitely compete. If I post up like Far Away or Nisha versus like Izayaki, I'm like, yeah, they can compete. Like the same thing across all their player.
They did
qualities.
In the summer showdown.
Yeah, exactly.
Very competitive.
It's really just like a team play issue. Like, I don't think it's a skill issue.
They weren't running. I mean, unless you're saying the meta was cheesy, they were running the meta. They were playing the ball. I mean, ball, Fire Mercy, Tracer kind of was meta at the time.
Yeah, but like that's sort of what I'm saying is, like, I haven't seen them play like an effective Reinhardt comp or an effective double shield comp. I haven't seen these things.
You're
from
stuck in the past, old man. Reinhardt's
dead. I don't know. I haven't seen enough from them. I want to see, like, I just had these 2021, like, the thing that stands out to me with the Hunters is they play Pharaoh Mercy and they play these compositions super well throughout the entire regular season. They go to the playoffs and they just change, they don't play the Pharaoh at all, and they just got bodied. Like, remember, I don't think they want a map in the playoffs. Like, how are you putting that team up against the 2020 Dragons?
Sure.
Fair enough. Okay, well, let's head to the other side of the bracket then. 2021 Dragons versus 2021 Fuel. Well, I mean...
We saw that play out many times.
Interesting. Well,
now, what if the 2018 Valiant were against the 2021 Dragons?
Oh, okay. Yeah.
See, we can thought experiments.
Bonnie Tracer true. Against Lich.
Yeah, let's just move to 2021 Dragons. And then now we have 2019 Shock versus 2018 Spitfire.
Oh,
this
wow.
is interesting, but... I don't know. I don't think it's that interesting.
The arguments I laid forth in the earlier round, I forfeit and I commit to the San Francisco
yeah.
Shock.
Yeah,
I agree.
They did not have a great 2018 regular season. They were ups and downs. Birdring benched himself for a while, I think. They brought in like an extra tank instead of Gesture. Oh, no, that was Vancouver, actually.
Rascal and Fisher were fucking causing shit from the bench.
Rascal and Fisher. Rascal went to Dallas Fuel. They had rotating flex supports, rotating main supports, I think, as well. Like that, the team was all
they nearly
the
exploded before they just went on that bracket run. You know, there's a world in which they just GG and go home.
Yeah.
They almost lost to the Gladiators with Irene. Mix like they remember they lost the first match. If they had just like boomed out of another match, they wouldn't have won anything.
That 2018 team was garbage. Screw those guys.
Okay, now this is the problem here, is that we have now, the bracket's good, but we've essentially become, it's just two teams. There's just only two teams remaining from different
That's
years.
That's true.
It's literally two teams. So on one side of the bracket is 2020 Shock versus 2020 Dragons. Well, I mean, what are we going to think about this one, huh? What are our thoughts here?
It has to be Shock.
It has to be Shock. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, let's take a look at the other side of the bracket where we got 2021 Dragons versus 2019 Shock.
Yeah.
Let's do the GOAT argument again.
Let's wait.
If 2021 Dragons were forced to play GOATs, do you have enough faith in that team to actually beat 2019 Shock?
No. I think 2019 Shock probably still would. I think they undoubtedly win just because they have the best Reinhardt in the league.
No, I disagree. There's a lot of possibilities here, Costa. The only difference, the only advantage that I think the Shock have is in the Reinhardt meta. I think Fate Reinhardt is probably one of his weakest heroes. Obviously, he's phenomenal at everything else, so weak is relative. But
you don't even know
what about Zarya? What about Zarya would be at all? Yeah, you have no idea.
Lip on Zarya? Dude, I'm fine. I'm putting all my money on Lip Zarya.
No, you can't. Corey was cracked in hitscan and can't play Zarya. No, you can't.
I am. No. I'm putting Lip on Zarya. I'm putting Void on the D.Va. I got Fleta on the Brig. You got Lee Jae on Lucio. And then you got Izzyaki on Zen. Fuck yeah, I'm signing up for that.
But the thing is, almost all those are directly comparable. You have data points for it. You have nothing for Lip Zarya.
Absolutely not. This 2021 Dragons roster is mechanically some of the best in all of their roles.
Sure, but also the
people that they compared to are the only people who are better than them.
Yeah. Also, there's just no direct. You can literally have a direct comparison of like a player that was incredible at DPS that literally had. There are so many players that are incredible at DPS that had no fucking clue how to play Zarya. Carpe. Corey, like, there's so many players that were great at DPS that had no fucking clue how to play Zarya at all.
Are you doubting Lip again? Dude, Lip is insane. What has Lip ever failed you? Ever. Okay, just once, ever. What has Lip ever failed you?
But the thing I can't say he's failed me in a universe we haven't existed.
I love him.
I'm not fucking Doctor Strange. Like, I can't.
What are we doing here?
My point here is that because we haven't lived through that universe, I can't then say he won't fail me. He could fail me in that universe. He could fail me in the next million universes, but another million, he could not fail me, right? Like, I can't make that call. I don't have the time stone. I don't know.
Then what are we theoretically bringing up here? Because then obviously the 2019 Shock is going to exist because they have actually existed. So therefore they just default win against the 2021 Shanghai Dragons.
Yeah,
They don't default win.
It's just I don't know if Lip could be as good.
2019 NYXL would not default win against the 2021 Dragons. We're talking about the greatest GOATS team to exist, which was great for a reason because all the players were insane and they understood the meta insanely well.
The best ever team to ever touch Overwatch 1.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean they're going to be best to every single meta you can think of.
Yeah, like especially if Lip has no data on the Zarya play.
But also, 2019 Dragons, which is a totally different roster, but 2019 Dragons had that triple DPS comp where they were actually able to beat the GOATS comps.
True.
Yeah.
What about if the 2021 Dragons played that style into the Shock? What about that? If they had Ball, that would have been doable. Better than Gamsu.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Definitely better than the Gamsu Ball. And then they've got, what was it? It was Pharah, Doom, Widow? Is that what it was?
Sorry, correcting history here. That stage 3 win was after a bunch of patch notes that actually nerfed the GOATS composition. That was not true GOATS. True GOATS was in stage 1 and stage 2, not stage 3. That was a nerfed GOATS composition. And so therefore, Shanghai Dragons win lessly qualify them to actually beat GOATS, even though that was the case.
Okay, I don't give a shit.
That patch happened before stage 2.
Either way, make your choice.
Throw your dice, okay? You guys are hiding behind the guise of time right now. Like, I want you guys.
I would still take 2021 Dragons, I think.
Yeah, I mean, look, the entire discussion here was about one specific meta that 2019 dominated.
Yeah, it was just we were talking about the GOATS meta. 2021,
yeah. But I will not tolerate the slander here for Rascal, Brig, Choyobin, D.Va, Moth, Lucio, Violet, Zenyatta. I'm not tolerating the slander from Custa, so it had to be defended.
So you think Moth, Lucio is better than Lee Jae on Lucio?
good.
You think Trojan D.Va is better than Void D.Va?
In the GOATs meta, Moth actually might have been.
I think the Moth Lucio is like one of the best styles for GOATs possibly had. I think Ligia Gong's Lucio was like probably one of like
Ligia Gong's Lucio would have been in front of the Rein Shield for like 30% of the game.
Yeah. Well, let's go to the finals then. The finals are the 2020 Shock versus the 2021 Dragons, which essentially is simply just saying like they're pretty much around the same teams as they were in 2021.
This game though, can I pay someone to make this happen?
Yeah.
This would be nasty. You've got Ants and Striker here against Lip and Fledder just to start with. That's a crazy good matchup.
At their peak,
you remember how good Ants was in 2020? And like, holy shit, Striker against Fledder too.
I don't have the stats in front of me, but I think in 2020, I think Ants had like 40% first kill ratio or something. It was absolutely incredible. Like, Shock just played 6 versus 5, like half of the game.
I actually think that DPS line is better for the Shock. I think Ants Striker at their peaks in 2020, and I don't say that lightly, is better than Fledder Lip from 2021. If we're talking long range hit scan, but if it's a Sombra Tracer meta, you have to give it to Lip, right? So. Again, it comes a little bit down. So
it comes out as a wash. So then let's compare. I mean, the tank lines don't really change. The tank lines the tank lines don't change because it's, you know, that's Shock's tank line is still super Choi. And then we got.
Well, they played a lot of Smurf in the 2020 finals, right? If I'm correct. Super early, really.
True.
Came
super. Yeah, that's true. They did play a lot of Smurf Winston. So.
I mean, if it was that Roadhog kind of meta, though.
I mean, I would take Super's Roadhog over Fate's Roadhog.
Yeah. In that playoff for 2020, I think Shock win that game.
I think they can't. Yeah, but, you know, if you're going to compare tank lineups, I too think that Super Choi might be better, but we can't forget, like, Fate and what he did on Wrecking Ball with this Shanghai team in 2021. True. And he just, like, people were like, me and Costa were literally getting paid to be on camera and just be like, they're playing ball. What the fuck are they doing? And then they just figured out and just beat Battlefield doing it.
They flipped a switch against that Winston Moira comp and they were like, oh God, everything we just said was incredibly wrong and Fate is just absolutely panicking. But here's the thing about it as well, where we're talking about the 2021 Dragons playing in the 2020 Grand Finals. Think about it inversely. Imagine if the 2020 Shock were playing in the meta of the Shanghai Dragons in 2021. I don't think it would be close. Like, I think the meta that the Shanghai Dragons are playing in 2021
was super dominant. I think the Sombra kind of ruins them. I think that's mostly the biggest factor to me when I look at this is simply a Sombra differential.
Yeah.
Rascal has a good Sombra, though.
He does, but I mean, he's not Lip.
You are a Rascal simp, my dude. Just tier 3 Rascal sub every day of the week.
I think holistically, we probably have to give the edge to the 2021 Dragons just a bit. But I definitely feel like it's a kind of a coin flip and almost entirely decided by what we are choosing is like going to make the, like, to me, I see this and like, okay, Shock wins in this meta, Dragons win in this meta. But then the one thing that you can guarantee between both these teams is that Sombra could be played in both of these eras, right?
Who wins in GOATs?
I'll still take Shock because 2020 Shock is still 2019 Shock.
No, but
it's not.
Oh, that's fair.
Striker on Zarya now.
Oh yeah, I guess that's true. Yeah,
that makes a big difference.
That does make a big difference.
And you don't have Rascal actually anymore. Oh no, you do have Rascal. He just wasn't playing for the latter portion of the season
for a variety of reasons. Mm-hmm. But let's not forget his Genji.
But you're not going to have
Echo, Brig, Batiste. There was a lot.
Okay. Calm the rant down.
that does change it up a bit. But I wonder if. But the thing is, then we're essentially just working at territory where neither Lip nor Striker really played that much Zarya, you know? Yeah, and the core of 2019 Shock would still be the same for GOATs.
It was a stupid hypothesis, I grant you that. It was a truly idiotic thought experiment. Do you agree, though, that both would win their respective years still? Or do you think one team would be able to beat the other in the year that they were good?
I mean, that 2020 playoffs meta.
I think 2020, it's like kind of like, I don't know, but I feel like Shock still were like fucking incredible in the So
I think they had the perfect meta, and I think they had their team exactly where they needed. They had that like dive setup with like Smurf Striker if they ever played like control and stuff like that. But if they ever needed to like slow it down and play the Roadhog, they had super. Like, I think they had all the bases covered. I don't think it was ever really, I think Shock 2020 was like the best at what they did in that time.
Are we saying that there's a there is a world where Shock 2020 is the best roster that's ever existed?
No.
Because I so why not? If you're so just immediately opposed to that.
2021 Dragons. 2021 Dragons. Like, if you would ask me before we saw 2021, absolutely, they were the best team to ever touch the game. Their diversity, their depth of roster, everything, the skill in which they were playing was absolutely incredible. But the 2021 Dragons, pound for pound against everyone else in the roster in pretty much all the metas that they played, were some of the best players in the world. And, like, if not the best players in the world in their role, I just think that team is just so good.
What happens if you take them out of a Wrecking Ball meta?
I think they can play a Winston meta. I think they can play Brawl. Like, they've shown the ability to play these other comps. The reason I think they one-tricked Wrecking Ball is because no one knew how to beat it. Like, they remember, they were good in the Winston metas. They just weren't as good as Dallas Fuel, who that was literally the perfect meta for them in a way. And I think it depowers a lot of... because it was just a stupid comp, right? Like, Winston Moira, it was just a dumb comp. Like, that's not a mechanical comp. That's just like, hey, girl, let's run at each other. Dude,
you're actually dropping the dishonest comp.
I am. It was called zombie comp for a reason, dude. Like, it was just boring.
But the thing is, you still had to have the skill to be fucking incredible at it, which is what Fuel was so good at, right? It's like their coordination was next level in terms of how their focus was.
But Shanghai was close, right? Like, it was always close every time Shanghai played Fuel. I think Fuel just had that slight edge. And that's why I'm saying, it's like, I think Shanghai wasn't a one-trick Wrecking Ball comp. They just...
Did we see a Ryan meta at any point? Am I forgetting one? I don't really remember seeing a Ryan comp at any point.
A little bit of...
I mean, obviously, there were teams that played Ryan, right? Atlanta, Shock played Ryan, but I don't think Shanghai at any point touched Ryan.
The only thing I can remember is, I think this was the grand finals of 2021 when they did the sim strat on the first point of Hanamura and it bodied Atlanta. And then the second time they did that same attack, they faked the sim strat and absolutely bodied the Atlanta again. They knew how to play it and they were smart enough to do it. I just don't think they played it as much because they knew they're playing into the West's advantage if you play Brawl against.
Sure.
The thing is, you also have to think mentality here. I feel like the mentality of like playoffs 2020 Shock, like coming out of like 2019 and like that buildup, like the 2019-2020 Shock era is literally like, it is the most Giga Chad mental of any team ever. Like, in my opinion, I think the 2019-2020 Shock mental era, like that locker room presence they had, was... and it's such an incredible testosterone bomb that if you dropped it like onto a piece of land, everyone would sprout facial hair. Like, I think the 2019-2020 Shock mental was fucking next level. That's the thing that honestly kind of like makes it close to me. It's just like how ridiculously steely powerful the mental was for Shock.
Sure, but I you know, the counter to that is that the 2021 Dragons were literally like the Terminator. Like, they came to Earth and just, you know, destroyed everyone around them. Like, they were robots. They were so
man versus machine.
And they just zero emotion. Like, they won the grand finals, walked out on stage and was like, we're going to go to McDonald's. They literally went to McDonald's after they won. They're just like, okay, cool. Thanks.
You notice that there's only one 2021 team that made it like that deep in our brackets, whereas there's a...
I mean, the 2020 Shock had a pretty easy bracket, to be honest. The strength of schedule in the bracket was not
good. But the thing is, all the other equivalent 2021 teams were knocked out by the Dragons. Except for Hunters. So it's like not even fair. It was literally still just one team eliminating, pruning the timeline.
Yeah.
Just getting rid of them.
Yeah. All right, are we going with the 2021 Dragons then?
We are.
I guess we'll go with the Dragons. My heart tells me Shock, but my brain...
I think Shock would win in a Orisa meta. And just like, we're going to sit back with Anz and Striker to play Tracer.
Or a Hog meta.
Sure, but you know, fucking Hog meta. Like,
that happened in the 2020 playoffs.
Yeah, and it was helpful. Yeah,
it's weird how we're like picking some metas are just like, oh, this meta, like not dishonest. Hog meta, so dishonest. But like all the other metas that suddenly randomly happened, really, those were honest. Okay,
I still remember in 2020 when I found out that they were going to like patch before the playoffs and I just like punched air. Like I remember where I was when I heard that. No joke.
I was molding in 2018 and like, then I just gave up.
Remember, that's like good. We would have got the 2020 Dragons versus the 2020 Shock if they didn't do that dumb meta change, because the only reason Sol was there was because they like
the stupid hog.
They embraced the stupid hog shit and just like ran through the playoffs, and it was like they were so average. Like, wait, I have it here. In the regular season, the Sol Dynasty went 12-12. They had a 500 record and they made it to the grand final.
I will admit the hog meta change before playoffs was definitely one of the most bullshit ones, because it also not only did it save Dynasty, it also made Justice randomly good, you know?
Yeah.
And I was pissed about that as well, because that team did not deserve to be good based off their like other performances. But let's move on then. So we've had our bracket. It's our best team of all time. The 2021 Dragon. Surely no one will be mad about this, Clueless. So this is the best team of all time. So now we have to hit our most important segment of the week, as it is every week, Bryn's player of the week.
Amazing.
Now Bryn is obviously not on the show. He's also visiting his nan, so like we haven't heard his input just yet, and he didn't get a key card, so he can't get out of his room in the nan facility. So I've had just devised my own player for Bryn's player of the week, and they'll transmit it to him via the monitor in his room. And I think I will pick, it's a pretty safe standard one, but I think it's a good one. I'm gonna pick Super as his last player of the week he'll ever probably receive, unless he unretires. I think he's earned it. He's earned it after his time in the Overwatch League. The ability to build himself like beyond just being a pure Overwatch League pro as well, when you look at like how rounded, well-rounded individual, how well he's like set himself up to exit that life, his impact on the game and the legacy, him as a competitor overall, him as a marketing tool, and also just like a general like, looking at
as a tool.
You know, well, I mean, you know, he's just, he's been all around like huge asset for the league and his teams. And like, I think there's a lot of respect to him. So I got to give it to him. I think Super is the Bryn's player of the week.
Absolutely. And when one of Super's viewers links him this timestamp and, you know, donates it to him, please like, comment, and subscribe to Plat Chat. You know, all of you little Super fans, go and just hit the subscribe button for us. Why don't you? And you know, maybe we'll talk about Super next week as well. Even though he's just a streamer, maybe we'll start a streamer podcast about him.
I mean, that's just what we do for Valorant, right? Make sure to shoehorn TSM or 100 Thieves and everything. So now we're going to make sure to get Super and everything moving forward with Overwatch. So that's been episode 125. Episode 125, you guys could believe it. 125 episodes of us doing this. Let us know why. Should we stop? Let us know in the comments. Let us know in the comments below, along with all the other interactions Josh proposed from the Super fans. And we're going to be back hopefully soon. It was a great week, and I'm feeling fresh.
Just say goodbye.
Let's send it.